everyone. This is the Rochelle Sparrow Psychic Connection. I'm so looking forward to talking to you all this evening. This is going to be a fabulous show. We have Norman Bennear with us this evening, and he is a marvelous author that wrote the book The Mindlings, which is an incredibly interesting book because it's very compelling in its ideas about how energy works and how the mind works and how we could get locked into ideas about our own mind. However, how we can also explore other ideas and energies that unlock those fixed ideas and lead us into other dimensions. So this is going to be quite a fascinating show. And he can be reached at www.mindlings.com. That's MINDLINGS.com. And before we get started today, what I'd like to do is answer a question from Marguerite. As you all know out there, I'm a psychic transchannel and a trained therapist. And basically what that means is that I contact other dimensions and bring in guides from other dimensions to help people emotionally heal as well as physically heal. So this is what she has to say today. I am 65 years old and currently a cancer survivor. I am optimistic, very positive in my outlook. I do some yoga and I do meditations. I am currently alone and can no longer drive as I have some eye problems. I would like to be a part of life again. Do you see that chance for me and how do I do this? I have one child, a son, and I'm very close to him, but he lives in Texas. Is there anyone else to come into my life if only in a friendly relationship? Okay, Marguerite. What we say and what we state for her is to focus on her own spiritual situation, which causes her more in-depth evaluation of what has occurred, it feels like, with the illness of cancer, because it has left her with extreme emotional scars that she is currently overlooking, hence her vision problems. So what we suggest here is that she begin to dive into, in depth, the idea that she is a complete survivor, that she has the ability to overcome any obstacles that have been presented. I'm getting husband energy here, so what they're referring to is obstacles with husband that have been emotionally, I'm getting a lot of, what they're giving me with this word is a lot of energy of conflict, and that have now begun to take a hold upon her idea of how she can be currently. Okay, so this is ex-husband, and that she can now survive in a much clearer and better way in terms of relinquishing past ideas of how she was. Okay, it feels like victimized, and that she can now forward her life into much more of an empowering stance for herself and with herself. Thank you, Marguerite. And God bless you. And now we have Norman Bennear. God bless you, Norman, and thank you so much for being on the show.
It's great to be here.
Okay, we're going to experience these noises, but we're just going to go with it.
Okay.
And have Don clear them up later on. Tell us about your book. But you know what? Let me backtrack here for a second. Before we get into your book, I want to share with the audience what happened to me when I started to read the book. As you all know out there, I go to a Jungian analyst on and off to explore the deeper regions of myself. And on this particular day, I go to my analyst and I come back and I stop at the post office, and your book, Norman, had been put on hold or lost at the post office, or something was going on with it because it was late. They had held it in there for 2 weeks before I got a hold of it. So I got a hold of it on this particular day, and it just so happens that I had been on my, at my analyst analyzing this dream, and the dream was that I was in an analyst's office, and there was this darker part of me, and my analyst was looking at this darker part of me, saying that I was personality disordered because I heard voices. And that, that was my, the start of my day, and also the state of mind in which I picked up your book and started to read it. Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah. Everything's connected.
Yeah, very connected. So here we are exploring all sorts of different ideas in the Mindlings about how the human consciousness and unconscious works. And I open up this book and I start reading it, and it begins to talk about, of course, how some people view who the world, who are psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists, in this really very boxed in way, that if you don't view it in a certain so-called correct way that, that fits into the DSM catalog, that somehow you're whacked. And that is how I began to read your book. So I found that immediately pretty fascinating. So let's begin to share with the audience about your book.
Okay. Well, mainly, in fact, that synchronicity event that you had is telling, because the book itself, it wants to debunk this idea that we are individuals, are a singularity. In fact, there are many selves within us, and somehow our culture tries to repress that. And to tell us, oh no, there's only one of you, and if any other voices speak to you within, then you get a disorder. And my assumption is that everything within the mind can eventually become a disorder if one lets that happen. But that a healthy mind has many voices, and one finds that, I think, when one I guess when it first came clear to me is at one time when I had extended myself in the relationship and was sort of shot down, and that was very, very painful. Mm. But there was a voice within me, which I now call the Minister of Defense, and who basically said, you set yourself up, why do you let this happen, why don't you pull back, there's no reason to be sharing with other people, you're only going to get hurt and whatever. And then another voice came in and said, no, this is, this is what life's about. You've got to explore, and that life is a journey of learning, and you must open yourself up. And then, of course, the troubadour came in and sang some songs within me that said, oh, you can't give this, you can't give that search up. So essentially what was happening is different voices within me were telling me how to deal with this pain I was experiencing. So eventually it became very clear that they all made up a community of energy, if you will, within, and which are mindlings, which are energy beings much like we are, that inhabit each of us. So we are a multiplicity. The idea that we have a singularity is distorts what I would view as the reality of our own daily experience. And so the setting ended up being a castle, and the image of the castle comes to me often if I'm meditating. And mm-hmm. So it was very obvious that it would that would be the central society, if you will, the community within me would be based in this castle. So there is a sovereign and his alter ego, and then there are these other characters who whenever I go about living my life or making decisions, they all voice how they would view the direction I'm taking. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Now, these voices that you heard, are these like physically hearing voices, or are these the common voices, so-called common? And I know that's a broad word.
It's an interesting thing. Once I get into writing, and when, you know, I usually meditate before I start writing, is the characters speak in a way. If I confront an issue, and then the characters speak, but they don't speak outside my ear, and they don't speak like when I've written academic work where you your mind is processing, and that's a different kind of the mind sort of doing you to be writing in a certain way. They're in between that, so it isn't. They're not in the outside of the ear. I often think of it as located in the inner ear, and that's where they would express. I think we get that all the time. You know, if you can't find something and you're looking for it and you say, now where did I put that? And, you know, another voice would say, you're always losing something. And, you know, it's a common occurrence when you're dealing with everyday reality that you're talking with your other selves. And so it's more of that genre. I don't know if it isn't ideational. There's much more of an underbelly of emotion to the dialogue that comes up with these characters.
One of the interesting things as you're talking that is coming up for me is that because of your meditation, you're seeing castles in the astral world, which is a very common experience for people who meditate. I also see castles all the time, and I believe that a lot of other people do too. And it sounds like that when you are in communication with these particular voices, you're already in a subconscious state.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like, no, I'm not going to say almost. It is like they are coming through that astral dimension, because when you are talking about those particular inner promptings about spirit, for example, forgetting the keys or looking at where the keys might be, and you get those promptings from spirit, like look here, look there, you're
yeah.
already connected to that other dimensional world
mm-hmm.
that just kind of floats through us on a subconscious level and then comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the very fascinating things that I found about your book. It's almost like entering a trance state. And as soon as you enter demise, as you call it,
mm-hmm.
you are entering into a trance state, and the main character, John, is taken to another dimension. Can you talk about the Mize a bit? And you know what else is very interesting? Dr. Sayer and all of her colleagues, some of whom are for this project and some of them
mm-hmm.
are not.
Yeah, the inner conflict and the outer conflict come together. They one reflects the other. But, the model begins with, of course, that the mind is in the body, it's not the body. So the mind is in a world of energy. And I view mindlings as transacting and between people. In fact, I guess at some point in the book I mentioned that the way to get to know oneself is through different processes. And I listed ethics, play, intimacy, and creativity. And much of what you do, I view as a channeling, as a form of intimacy. In fact, it must be a profound intimacy to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're doing that, one's own inner unconscious energies, different mindlings, express themselves. So in my worldview, that every like creativity there was a Romeo and Juliet lived within Shakespeare. They were within him, and he exteriorized them. So much of life experience, if one wants to explore one's inner self, is trying to exteriorize two different processes, and I view ethics, play, intimacy, and creativity a way of doing that. But I, you know, and I think these mindlings or these energy beings interact with other human beings. And I think when one finds soulmates, you find that their mindlings and one's own mindlings are in great rapport. In fact, I view life's journey as that kind of search, an odyssey of finding the inner energies of other people that are very synergistic with one's own.
Well, yes, that's one of the interesting things is that when you're talking about the mindlings of us all, they're absolutely alive, as energy is.
Yes.
And they can be exchanged. Because one of the interesting things is that, of course, if you have your own mindlings in one body and mindlings in another body, for example, you're talking about soulmates,
mm-hmm.
there has to be some kind of communication that takes place.
Yes, and I think that's, and it's so strange. I think we're socialized to ignore those cues. And if I can add one thing, when I was teaching at one time, and someone had walked, I had a class where a lot of students would come in who hadn't enrolled but just would sit in class, and a older woman came in and sat down, and then at the end of the class she came up to me and she said we had met before in a prior life, and I thought that was an interesting metaphor, paradigm, whatever, and but eventually she ended up doing, she was a sort of a reincarnation counselor and brought me back to the 1200s and the Children's Crusade. And what she did is she took me out of the box, which I had, my academic training had put me in. And she was saying, use another paradigm. Just get out of that and let your mind explore. And ultimately from that process, the mindlings emerge. But much of that process to me was unlearning. You know,
mm-hmm.
we keep thinking that learning is additive, but at some point, you know, I had been Jesuit educated, and so everything that was valued was the intellect and nothing else. So it took a lot of unlearning of that. So the process was, I keep thinking I went from St. Paul to St. Maslow, and so on, so that I could open up different ways of looking. And this, the mindling world to me is a much more playful way of looking at our energy system. And one can be very creative, and it's a very positive. It's saying that we have all these, if you feel a deep depression, there's an energy within one that's causing that. And one needs to use other energies that one has to counteract that. And these energies I've identified as mindlings. So there's, in fact, in my mind world, there's a Jerome, a hermit, which detests life and is angry all the time. And I have to just keep him in check. And, the fool within me, the court jester helps me to do that. But I think if we, with all these aspects of ourselves, the people I've interacted with who use this model find it, it gives them an avenue of exploring themselves that are much, again, that's more playful and creative. I've had individuals that have used it in conflict resolution, where instead of just saying to someone, where a significant other may say to someone, the trouble with you is, and one hears phrases like that a lot, instead of saying that, it's saying, you know, your minister of defense is too powerful, or your minister of defense is not allowing other voices within you to speak. So when you do that, it's a much less threatening way of dialoguing with someone, and it also allows them to explore other aspects of their own identity.
So this is very interesting. So you're talking about obviously your own processes, which are so deeply ingrained in, it sounds like, a religious format. And you had to break out of that and take a look at who your true self was and yeah. is. So I'm just wondering about that process itself. Did you feel like John in the book, as though you could go crazy?
Yeah, in fact, and that you're describing it very well. It's moving from a religious format to a spiritual one. And I think one can, in some ways, combine those. But for me, the journey was to open up the spiritual world. And there was a time, and there was a different crises, and they were mainly ethical ones, strangely enough, that I had confronted, that events that occurred, and I made decisions that were opposed to what I had been socialized in my religion to do. And I made them opposite because I thought they were more, a higher moral ground. They were more altruistic. And I think there's a point where, I think it's Dabrowski, was a European psychologist, and he referred to that process as positive disintegration. And what happens is basically your composition of all your energies, in my case, the mind link, reshuffle themselves. And you're sort of disintegrating, but the outcome is positive. You end up at a higher level of altruism once you go through that process. And I think we tend to view disintegration as always a negative. Oh, they're falling apart kind of phrase, and something's wrong with them. But disintegration can be enhanced and encouraged if one is moving towards a higher plane of their own awareness and of ethical behavior. In fact, if one looks at some of the great altruistic human beings, one finds that they've experienced this kind of disintegration where somehow they came out at a higher level of being. And I guess I believe that's what life's journey is, that where we should be attempting to undo ourselves periodically to see if we can reorganize our inner selves, our inner energies, at a higher level of being.
So you're talking about death of the ego and rebirth.
Yes, and I view the rebirth as all the energies surrounding the ego, which I view as much of that's in the unconscious. And Carl Jung himself had sort of guides, inner guides that he spoke of, mm-hmm. but seemed to have hesitated on it. So I'm sure a lot of people would have rejected that. But I believe one has inner guides and inner energies that, in my case, it's Lady Anna, which is a wise and wonderful crone. And in my life, I've been affected by two really wise and wonderful crones, and I dedicate my book to them. One was to my grandmother, who was a wonderful storyteller and full of life's meaning and up to her 90s. And another one is a reincarnation counselor, Phyllis, who is a marvelous woman, 91, and active in the peace movement and continuously goads me to go deeper in the search of different parts of myself that have been socialized. The effect of socialization was to take them out of me.
Mm-hmm. Can we explore that a little bit? I'm just very interested, and if you feel comfortable with this, is to take a look at some of the ethical dilemmas that you were faced with.
Yeah, that's a difficult topic, actually. One of them, if I go back, and I guess I can reveal, when I was starting my doctoral work, there was a young woman who was in the same program, and she was dating this other guy, and she got pregnant, and her family was very strict and Puritan, and she just was terrified of how to deal with that. And at that time, the abortion was illegal, and she made arrangements to have a, in quotes, a doctor give her an abortion in what was the cellar of a building in New York, and which was very dangerous and life-threatening. And they both came up to me and said, what can you do? And I, of course, said, here, you know, there's all these other options and whatever. But they insisted, and she got ready to do that, and I got very frightened of her doing that. So I told her that I had heard of a clinic, and it would happen to be in Puerto Rico, where if that's what she was going to do, it would be safer. And that's what she did. And I felt I had encouraged that event. And that's contrary to my basic convictions. But I felt I was, again, you know, my religious training would have been, don't go there, don't even talk about that option. And but when she had decided, I thought, the mindlings are interfering. Are you there? Hello? Are you there?
Yeah.
The mindlings are interfering with this story.
They are.
But anyway, what happened is I think I felt I had been a part of whatever she decided to do that, but I thought, was I part of encouraging that? Should I not even have done anything? But I thought once she was threatening both herself and I thought, no, I can give them an advice if that's the route they want to take. Well, I had been told by a religious person at the time that I had done a great evil.
Wow.
By doing that, and I totally fell apart. It was very, very difficult, and that in fact that religious person said, I don't even know if you can be forgiven for that, and I thought I was trying to help someone, and anyway, so that eventually that led to a positive, what I viewed as disintegration, and and realized that I was carrying a lot of Puritan baggage, which was based on you don't care what people feel or do. You care more. I was caring much more about the rules of the game on how to buy my heaven and whatever. Does that make any sense?
Oh, absolutely. I'm just drawn into how difficult that must have been for you.
It was very, very difficult, and it was, but I view that as I went through what I think was a bit of a disintegration, where I had to look at my entire value system, and from that point on, and it was strange because I think in my I could never have written a mindless book not having experienced that, and I hope this is true, that I'm a much more altruistic person now. And in many ways, much more, well, not, and definitely more spiritual than I was before, because I struggled between, it was an ethical dilemma. It was, do you give this person information that may save their life? Or on the other hand, are you going to give them information where they may destroy, they will destroy a life? And so the issue was just all very confusing. But to this day, it remains a kind of, you know, if I hadn't made that choice, I wouldn't have had to pull myself back together in a different way.
Yes, that's pretty amazing how challenging that must have been for you and how you took up the challenge.
Yeah, it was, but I felt it ended up being a more loving thing to do, whatever the outcome was. And I a lot because of Phyllis is, of course, she has a very different view of what death is, and so the process is very, as I see it, you know, that death is a midlife crisis, and we go
I'm
on.
I'm losing you, Norman.
What?
Hold on just a second. This has got to stop before we continue. Okay.
The mindlings don't like that.
Yeah. All I can hear is like the mind link once in a while. Nope, not done yet? All right.
Does anybody know what that is?
No, what is that?
I have no idea.
That's the mind links interfering with what we're talking about.
Remember I told you weird things have been occurring?
I think Norman's right. I think it's the mind links.
They don't want to be made known is what the story is there.
Well, I'll let you continue. It's crazy.
Okay, that's all right.
But it's the model, and that model is, in her view, is that we choose, we choose our when to come back. And so life is just a continuous process. And much of her journey is finding people who she had known in prior lives and reconnecting with them. And I found that proved to be interesting in my own life of individuals who seem to have had in the prior lives some experiences which match mine, or that we may have known one another in those other times. By the way, the mind links to me are useful and a good model in other ways. I view them as what we call library angels when I do research and just roam through the library and suddenly find a book. And or the children's imaginary friends, and a lot of things that we view as either weird or pathological, I think can be explained by mind links expressing themselves in different ways.
So they're always acting as clairvoyant energies. Thank God.
Yes.
To help us out.
Yeah, no, I view them as the model is a very positive one, and we exist in a cosmic womb, and we live all interconnected, and energy is fundamentally all that really is. The matter is really illusory, and so if one goes into that world, there's positive forces. The negatives are the absence, in my view, of the positive forces being worked out. That makes sense.
Yes. And the other thing that I was thinking about as you were talking is that the mindlings don't seem to be specifically, although they can be repressed and suppressed, they don't seem to be specifically outcast. Not quite. It doesn't quite get there. The mindlings get angry at one another, but it doesn't even seem like the most obnoxious of them all is somebody that they want to kick out of the kingdom. So there's always this current of having to deal with what's there and how to work it out somehow.
Yeah, I agree with that. Although I have in the castle of my mind, what used to exist in medieval castles, a chamber of forgetfulness where they can throw a mindling in there, it's sort of a dungeon, and that mindling's influence on the person can be blocked. There's a monk in my mindling world, and the monk at one point was put in the chamber of forgetfulness. So it blocked my capacities to try to transcend from one level to another. So it's, but they're not destroyed.
They're not destroyed, and there's always a sense that they're kind of hanging out.
They hang out, but they also move between people. And I think when death occurs, as there's a scene in the book where one's mindlings move about and can go into another, and so we carry, if we lost someone we love, we carry some of their mindlings, some of their life's energy within us. In fact, I noticed the other day of a couple who's one of them died, and after a period of time, the mate seemed to exhibit behaviors and even phraseologies in their speech that were more like their mate had been than they had been, and I thought, you know, mindlings went into them. I mean, the whole issue of human communication is a mystery. How we're talking, something is transpiring between us, and so I tend to think that that there's energy flowing,
mm-hmm.
and I would assume you believe that, since in channeling, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's just bringing in or going up or communicating.
But I'm intrigued that someone would have indicated that the diversity of voices within you would be not a positive force. Did I hear you right when you said that?
Oh yes, absolutely. Because I had been in counseling before I actually saw this Jungian analyst, and through the counseling, there were indications that something was wrong with me. Although at that time, I wasn't specifically saying I was a channel or that I could read energy because I didn't understand that myself. But I was probably giving a lot of indications that that's who I was mm-hmm. as a person and getting labeled that in an aberrant way because of that.
Yeah, that's horrible. But that's so common. And
it's very common.
Yeah, and people who have great abilities and just that they're camouflaging much of their creative powers because of the myth of mental illness, the society we live in, that DSM-3 is absolutely, or 4 is it now, I don't know which it is. It's just appalling that, you know, I guess I view that every healthy mind, that, for example, I guess something like paranoia would be that a minister of defense gains too much power within oneself. But that can, by realigning one's own inner life, one can control that.
Mm-hmm.
But much of what is labeled mental illness means that the culture, those who dominate the culture don't like it because what you do is a freeing reality.
Right.
And so, in fact, much of socialization is a process of domestication. I mean, they're trying to make us nice, quiet little animals. And much of the analysis today in the field of psychology and psychiatry, that they're going further in kind of a reductionistic, materialistic way of looking at the human spirit, which is frightening. You know, that they end up saying it's all of this is synaptic connections and not nothing more. And they're robbing us of our very spirit by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a lot of energy to fight that. And
yeah, it does, unless it becomes reconciled in yourself with your own mindlings, and they become at peace with it.
And I think once you do that, and then you accept that, and you accept, and then you find all at once that opens all sorts of doors there's so many avenues to different ways of knowing reality. And once you do that, then your mind has been freed, and that becomes very exciting. And one of my thing I hate the most is how people have used death as a control mechanism over human beings. And I mean, it's been, if you look at the history of religions, that mainly they have used death and they've tried to create a great fear of death as a means of controlling human behavior to do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's horrifying to me that as we go through life, death is another part of a journey, and it should be something that we could look forward to without fear. And hell is created by people who want to control other people.
Mm-hmm.
That
yes,
makes sense
I think that's really very, very true, and it's been very effective down through the ages.
Absolutely, and very frightening that people are controlled by that, and you see people who fear. Yeah, they fear death, so they're afraid to live, and that's just to try to free people from that is very difficult. What one has to become is what some anthropologists do, is you become a participant observer. In other words, you look within your own mind, you see these cells, and you participate because it's your mind, but you're also an observer, and you're like an anthropologist looking at your mind saying, oh, wow, that's how that's organized, and it gives you an ability to study that. It's the mind like is a playful model. And I think that's why I use the novel as a way of doing it, because it allows for much more playfulness rather than if I had written a book about the nature of the human mind to be used in a psych class. I had written academic books before, and they don't touch the soul.
No. One of my questions for you as I was reading the book is, what about the mindling's mind?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. In fact, I've debated that, and do mindlings have mindlings? And and then you can go the other way. Are we mindlings in a great spirit?
Oh, yeah.
Or we could be mindlings in a cosmic energy system, and they can go on forever. Does that make sense? Well, yeah.
Absolutely. Backwards and forwards.
Yeah, and that's what So it's a great exploration. You know, the universe is magnificent in that this energy, this world of energy is at all levels and all sorts of dimensions. And I view the positive energies as overwhelmingly dominant. And if we allow that, and that's what we have to do, is to empower people and ourselves to use our positive energies for the well-being of others.
I want to talk a little bit about the model. It sounds like you've used this model for many different applications.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, it was, as I started, some of my academic work was on belief systems that exist in a society, like Puritanism, Progressivism, and Romanticism, and I had done how they influence human development and learning. And my students always confronted me saying, you know, I feel like I'm not only sometimes a Puritan, I'm sometimes a Romantic and sometimes a Progressive. And the more I thought about that, I thought, yeah, in fact, we're different. I mean, if someone goes through a difficult crisis of some kind, you tend to become more Puritan. You tend to put your minister of defense in charge because you're threatened. But at other times, you tend to be more free and as the kind of more hippie, the hippie part of oneself. And so I moved from looking at society as belief systems to a diversity of belief systems within each of us. And my students would usually say my morning classes, I was a Puritan, and by evening I was more of a Romantic, right, the way my mind was working. And so then at some point it said, well, these are energies. These are energies. So those became mindlings. And then I started to view through the lens of this mindling world different realities, like death itself and how human relationships and how intimacies are developed, how we create. So it ended up being a sort of a paradigm in which it gave me a way of looking at all different realities that are common to our lives. And it's very liberating to me. It still is, actually. I still find that it opens avenues, and you tend to lose your tendency to be judgmental and to block off things more, trying to look into things rather. I don't know if that answered that question.
Yes, 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 and there's more, because you said that you've used it in conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And also educating people.
Yeah, I find it very helpful, and people are confronting a crisis of some kind or an issue, is to have them look at themselves as their many selves and saying, what self are you listening to when you say you want to do that? And it's always amazing to me how individuals will end up saying, well, it's my minister of defense who's telling me I should be cautious. Or it's the fool that's telling my inner fool is telling me to do that. I know I shouldn't, but my inner fool's saying, go ahead, life is short and whatever. So that in many ways, by looking at their mindling, it's like trying to set up a hierarchy of how one has structured one's mindling. So I tend to see much of socialization as putting, I think a child is, we teach our children to put the minister of defense in charge so they'll be protected. But when we become adult, many of us carry a toolkit, a survival kit, that's based on the minister of defense being in charge. So we can never liberate the rest of ourselves, because we're always using this defense against because we're afraid. We were taught to be afraid. So that to try to help people say, no, you don't have to, minister of defense doesn't have to be in charge of you. There are other parts of you. And as you talk with people, you suddenly discover that some of them are secret closet poets. They write poetry, but they don't let anyone see it. And you suddenly realize that people have this richness that they have not shared. And so a lot of what I do is actually encouraging people to explore those many selves that they have.
And at the end of the book, John moves into a situation that is much more flourishing for him mentally.
Yes. In fact, he leaves the castle, which was restrictive. And so that eventually his mindlings leave and they go off and they're in search. And as you know, he changes place with one of his guides, his inner guides, Phileas, and he becomes a mindling and his inner guide becomes a human. And the second book follows his inner guide who is now human and going through this world and all that he encounters.
Hold on just a second, Norman. We are experiencing mindling technical difficulties.
Well, I tend to think the mindling, those are the...
I promise you folks, I have absolutely no clue as to what that would be.
Some mindlings are very mischievous. And
they are.
Yeah, they. In fact, they. I think a lot of mindlings are called poltergeists, but either way, they're mischievous. And it's better to hide their reality. Some mindlings want to hide that they're there. So they're the ones making that very strange sound.
Okay. Can we talk to them in some way?
Well, they stopped now that we told them to be quiet.
Okay, good. You're not ignored. We just want you to be quiet right now.
Yeah. Does that all make sense?
Yes, it does. It makes excellent sense. So at this point, your second book comes in. And can you talk a little bit about what is the name of your second book? How can people get a hold of it?
The second one's not out yet. I'm still working on it, and the title's not... I've got all sorts of working titles, but nothing really concrete. But it begins with a mindling who is now a human, and it's that journey in the world where confront everyone saying you're not normal, and he challenges all those models that control him. I wanted to add one thing. I had a neighbor, a friend who just passed away last week, and just a very sort of a soulmate. She's 82 and just full of life. But the rabbi in the synagogue took one of the poems in the book that I had that she had next to her bed that she had copied. And he read it in a synagogue during the service. And I found that very, very meaningful and sad in some ways, but very meaningful because it was a very positive view of the whole process. And when she knew she had cancer and it was not going to be cured, she was a hero. She became my hero.
Hmm.
And I've been gifted with wise crones in my life that have come into my life and have modeled behavior that is something to imitate. And so I just wanted to mention that. It was just I keep thinking her spirit is with me and some of her mindlings are with me now.
That's wonderful. God bless her. And I'm glad that she's with you and continues to live on.
Yes, and that to me is that many of her mindlings, we had long conversations and especially when she was ill and her mindling, I feel that many of her mindlings have come into me and are basically there for me. When I need them, they're going to be there so that I can have the dignity that she had through the process she went through. And that's much of what life is to me, I guess, is we transact. We don't just interact, but we transact with other people, and it's people we meet on our journey, and we meet. I think if we'd met in the past life, that my friend Phyllis tends to believe that we seek each other out if we had been through a dramatic event and at some time in the past, and that we meet again. So it's sort of looking for old friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what life's journey is, I guess.
Yeah. It is. I believe it is, too. And
that I envy you for the gift of channeling. It's a gift I don't have, and I would think, I heard a little bit about your, on your, with Kennedy, and it's just, it's quite remarkable, but it's a gift, and, if anyone said otherwise, then they don't know what the mind is like at all.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm thinking as well that you're very gifted in being able to tune into the mindlings here on the show who have made themselves quite known.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity, and I think it's a very positive view of the mind. And
hold on just a second, Norman. They're going wild, you see?
Yes.
Yeah, I was talking about them, and there you go.
Yeah, I know. Every time I get into that, this is they don't want me to talk about self-actualization for some reason. So someone's mindlings are jumping in here. But anyway,
we go.
Isn't that strange? Have you had that before?
Man, they're going wild.
Yeah. Isn't that strange? That's See, I guess I still think mindlings could do that.
Okay.
It's a strange noise, too, isn't it?
This is wild. All right. Done.
There we go.
Thank you.
One of us put them away for a while.
I think it was our combined energies.
But I believe that it's a good example of what the mindly world is, that you have to take charge of it, and that there are mindlings that would want to interfere. As there are human beings who want to interfere with one's self-development, and as is that person who gave you that awful reaction to the richness that you were exhibiting.
Aww.
And that's it's just amazing. There are still people like that in the world, but they again, those are the controllers. You know, they want us to follow a very narrow path, and we have to resist that. That's why what you're doing is so great.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. So I wanted to give people your website again, and I think you have more than one, don't you? You have www.mindlings.com.
Yeah. And I have an email address if they want that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Norm, N-O-R-M, 408 @AOL.com.
And the book, again, is The Mindlings.
It's called Mindlings. There's no the in front of it.
Oh, sorry.
It's Mindlings, Encounters Within Inner Space.
Yes, Mindlings.
Mindlings, Encounters Within Inner Space. And I suspect the second book will be Mindlings, Encounters Within the world space, or within the space we inhabit with our physical bodies, is going to be an exploration of that. But I think for anyone who wants a more playful, romantic view of the mind, you know, with the Freudians, you had a very Puritan view of what the mind's all about, and that remained a lot, I think. And then you have the mechanistic view that the Neo-Skinnerians have, and to break away from those models, to enjoy one's mind as diverse as it is, and to look for its diversity, and that surely, it seems to me a healthy way of being and a happy way of being.
Mm-hmm. That's what struck me about the book, is that self-acceptance that was finally reached towards the end. And if we all have that capability of just allowing those inner energies to exist with recognition, it doesn't have to be necessarily that you're going to allow one to take over from another, or a depraved energy to become the prominent energy in your field of awareness and activity, but it means just allowing those energies to just to exist in
yeah.
recognition that they're there.
Absolutely. There's a British comedy, and there's one of the female characters in it has a phrase, whenever she feels strongly about something, she says, I am unanimous in this. And much of life is, it seems to me, is getting one's mindling at certain times to be unanimous in something. But at other times, you want them to have the conflicts, because that increases one's the richness of one's decisions in life. That they're all there, and as you say, you don't want to take any out. As some may be painful, but they represent a reality from within. So it's I think what'd be important for everyone is to try to find their guide, their inner guide,
mm-hmm.
and who can carry them through. By the way, you mentioned the castle on meditation. I was intrigued that some of the people I've shared this with view their the space within their mind as a ship.
Ah.
And I'm intrigued at how that's a different mindset. And they have all basically the same characters, but you have the captain instead of the sovereign, and they have all the same characters, but they're within a structure that's a ship, and they're moving. And so I'm intrigued at how many different structures people would have,
That is very interesting.
And
that's a good question. I suspect
other people may have other kinds of models of what their inner world would be structured like if they looked at it this way. I hate to say it because it sounds like it diminishes it, but it's a lot of fun to have people explore their inner mindlings and how they would. The hierarchy of power that they give to them. And I know I've had with some couples that listed their mindlings and the hierarchy of how they view which are more powerful and which should be more powerful than others and how they interact because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases causing problems, some cases increasing the intensity of their relationship. So it's a wonderful way to look within oneself without worrying about if one's integrated enough, you know, that one should be should enjoy in the plurality and the diversity.
Hmm. And the book is called Mindlings: Encounters Within Inner Space. www.mindlings.com.
Right.
And thank you so much for being on the show. And when you are ready with your second book, just give us a ring.
Oh, I will for sure.
And we'll put you back on.
And keep doing what you're doing. You're wonderful.
Oh, well, you're wonderful too. And just God bless your process that you went through and the courage that it took to make those kinds of decisions for yourself, because obviously it was quite a struggle for you. And you
mm-hmm.
couldn't have written this book if you hadn't gone through the struggle that you did. So it's just wise to pay attention to what we all can be so that we can offer what we can be to the world. And through your offering, you're going to help, and you already have helped a lot of people. So that's just a wonderful thing. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. And happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you and happy holidays to everyone out there. Next week, we're going to have a 3-hour special at home with Robbie and Rochelle, at home for the holidays, with Robbie and Rochelle. It's going to be a 3-hour special. We are hoping that you tune in. It's going to be fabulous. We're going to be doing sessions for people, talking about spirituality, talking about how you can connect more to your own spirituality. And this is all going to start up 6 p.m. Central Time on Sunday. So hope to see you there. And thank you so much, Norman, again. And thank you, everybody out there. Bless you all.
Thank you, Rochelle.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Nick.
Bye now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.